I'm Jamie.
And I'm Beth. Welcome to Thief Steals the Podcast.
Where I steal the podcast.
And I steal it back.
Okie dokies. Today we are talking about season 5, episode 2, The Blue Line Job. We have this week our first and only ever guest on the Leverage Podcast. We have August. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Hello, my name is August. My pronouns are they, them. I'm so excited to be here. I have seen exactly one episode of Leverage, and that is this episode. And it is because at some point a couple of years ago, almost now, I think Jamie said, oh, Leverage has like a hockey episode. And I was like, what if? And here we are, and I'm very excited.
And I said, absolutely, we need a hockey expert because I know fucking nothing about it.
I don't know shit about hockey.
I mean, to be fair, you're in the like hemisphere where that makes more sense. There is hockey in Australia, but I know it's not.
Field hockey is more popular than ice hockey in Australia.
For obvious reasons.
We've got a lot more fields.
It's a lot harder to have ice. I am very glad to have someone who actually knows about hockey, because all I know about hockey is that I could never play it because I am uncoordinated enough on fucking solid ground. I cannot ice skate for my life. I'm like a little baby giraffe, and then you put knives on my feet and then you put me on a slippery surface and it's 100 times worse. So
I tried to teach Beth how to dance once. That did not go well.
You're just talking regular dancing, not like dancing on ice, just dancing.
Just regular dancing. Just normal boring dancing. Okay.
Yeah.
And I tried to go ice skating with some friends and I had to hold the little like chair that they have for children. Yeah. I could not let go of that because I just kept fucking falling over. Exactly. There was just nothing. I was either standing still or on my butt and there was no middle ground.
You know, I get it.
And Beth's almost 6 foot tall, so.
So it's a long way to fall.
I get it. I am Canadian, you know, lived here my whole life, but I can also not really skate.
Okay, great.
I'm also very uncoordinated. And so while I like know hockey really well as a fan, I'm not going on the ice. I'm having really loud opinions.
Does that mean that I'm probably the best person?
Are you the most coordinated person on the podcast?
Yes. Absolutely, you are, Jamie.
Low bar.
Yeah, you've seen me try to walk.
But no, so I think we need to get into the first point that I want to make in this episode. And this is not something that you'll understand, August, because you haven't seen the other episode that ripped.
That's relevant.
So this is actually the second of two episodes that I classify as like the hockey episodes. We had you on this one and not the previous one, because the previous one literally just features like an ex-hockey player.
Yeah.
But we get the line from Elliot, you never know when you're going to have to fight on ice. He's now having to fight on ice. So that's now come full term.
When was that episode?
It was back in season 2.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I know, because I'm struggling to remember anything about it.
In that episode, who is the hockey player?
He's a fictional hockey player named Mark Vector, who basically... He was a hockey player, he was an enforcer, and then when he retired from hockey, he went and become like a stockbroker.
I remember this.
Except for he's an idiot and doesn't know how to be a proper stockbroker, and he lost everyone's fucking money, and then, yeah, basically dealt with the mob and then took a plea deal despite the fact that he'd lost everyone's money, so he didn't actually get prosecuted for losing everyone's money.
Oh, so it's very adjacently about hockey.
Yeah.
That's why this is the true hockey episode. And we get lots of hockey.
You said hockey episode, and I was like, does that mean we're getting, like, a little bit of hockey? And I watched this, and it is so much hockey. I have, like, so many notes about hockey-related things in this episode, which is, I wasn't sure what to expect, because you never know with sports-themed episodes, if they're going to be just kind of, like, sprinkled in. But this is, like...
Oh, you know, when Leverage does a sport episode, they're like, first up, what if we make Elliot just, like, a little... bit of a celebrity and make him play the sport.
Yeah, give him a little costume.
Give him a little
outfit.
Yep. This is the second time we've seen that happen. We also had a baseball episode.
The baseball one is fucking iconic, actually.
I may have to go back and watch the baseball one because I've realized, despite the fact that I'm not really a sports person, I am sort of a sucker for like sports episodes of television.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and we were talking a little bit before we started recording, which is probably a mistake. We probably should have done that. But like, I think one of the things that I said to you was that like this episode is probably not the episode I would have started you on for Leverage, other than the fact that it's hockey. But I think that the baseball episode has better examples of the team dynamics and stuff to get you actually invested in who the characters are and how they play off each other. Whereas this one, like, actually, I wanted to talk about this a little bit because I thought it was really weird, which is that the team is basically split up mm-hmm. the whole episode. Like, I had a note.
Are they not usually split up the whole episode?
No. Like, and I have a note here where I said, I feel like this ep is like weirdly imbalanced and it's bizarre to not see Elliot interacting with anyone but Nate. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't have a single fucking conversation with Parker or Hardison this whole episode. I don't think he even interacts with Sophie. I think the only conversation that is had with Elliot and another character is Nate. And yeah. even that is minimal because he's mostly on the ice.
Other than the first scene where the entire team's doing like the briefing.
Is Elliot in that scene?
Yeah, but I don't think he says anything.
Yeah, because I don't remember him being there.
I didn't remember him being there until I watched it the second time. And then mm-hmm. they mentioned something and I was like, oh, I forgot he was. I don't remember him being in this scene. But I think it's because he's just kind of there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like this unfortunate habit. You can't really see it that clearly in this episode, I don't think, especially as someone who's coming into it knowing nothing. But like basically every member of the team has like a very distinct job that they do as part of the like.
I kind of got that a little bit.
In this episode specifically, you have Hardison say, well, I'm not the thief or the grifter. AKA, why the fuck would I know how to pick out a lock?
Yeah. But like, yeah, so you've got Sophie, who's the grifter. So she basically just plays people by like acting, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, she did in this episode.
Yeah, which was brilliant. And I loved her so much.
Yes. Sophie is correct. I love her. She can do no wrong, in my opinion.
Oh, good. I'm glad that's a good opinion because I'm like, based on this episode, I love her.
Mm-hmm. She's great. Also, I stand Gina Bellman because she's actually a Kiwi. So she can do a respectable Aussie accent and she does.
Nice.
But basically, yeah, you have Sophie's the grifter. You have Parker, who is the more traditional, like, petty thief sort of, like, pickpocketing, which, again, we see in the episode. We see her steal the badges. Hardison is, like, more IT, like, cyber crime kind
he's
of deal.
He's the hacker.
Yeah.
So he goes, I'm in.
Yeah, he has the I'm in voice.
It's so fun to see him as well, like, coming from my Supernatural background. Like, so it was fun to see him in. I forgot until I got into
that episode. Randomly looking at AO3 like Leverage fan fiction one day, and I was like, oh, there seems to be a lot of like fic that's like, you know, Hardison has a twin brother named Jake. I was like, who's this Jake character? And so this is mid-season one, mind you.
Oh, I think, like, I remember Beth telling me about this.
No idea who Jake was. And then
the fuck is Jake?
Spoilers for the what, season two finale? Jake straight up murders Sam, and Beth just did not remember who he was.
I was like, he can't be anyone important. I don't know who he is.
I mean, to be fair, he is and isn't important.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, and then you have Nate, who's kind of like the mastermind above everything, and then you have Elliot, and Elliot is the hitter, quote unquote. And so basically, he is the muscle, right, for like lack of a better term. And I feel like I really like Elliot as a character. I think he's really interesting. But I do feel like he often gets left to the wayside because his like purpose within the team is often rooted in like just violence. So like they'll use him for a fight sequence. And then I feel like he's actually underutilized in other parts of the episode, which is normally why I really like episodes where they make him some kind of micro celebrity or something, because he becomes integral to the plot of the episode in a way that isn't just violence. And you get to see him kind of like branch out, and you get to see like little facets of his personality, and you get to see him having fun. And it's kind of, it's, you know, it's really nice for me. Like, I like to get some use out of Elliot that isn't just like stand in an alleyway and punch a bad guy, you know?
Right. And like, he does get to do some like punching in this episode, but he also gets to like play some hockey and like, yeah, be that micro celebrity. And it's kind of fun.
Yeah. But this episode, he's so isolated from the team. And so much of like, even when he's on the field, like, or on the ice, like, it's still just he's being put there for the sake of violence. And I was like, it really bumped me out. I was so excited to have Elliot be a little celebrity and have his little like his little fan moments, because normally like this kind of like the baseball episode, he's signing autographs and like shit, and I was waiting for that and it didn't happen, and I was kind of bummed out.
I do think August needs to watch the country music episode.
Okay, so if you can give me, like, you, I think based on this, I'm curious enough that I will watch a handful. I've already went and looked up what episode the baseball episode is because I do want to watch the baseball episode.
Okay.
But I will also watch the country music episode. So I'm like, I'll.
There's another familiar face in that one.
Yeah. Another supernatural crossover actor.
Oh, love that.
Actually, there's a few because there's also a different episode that has Mitch Pileggi. Which is fun because I watched the episode and I was like, oh my god, the alternate timeline.
Yeah.
Also, just anything with Mark Sheppard.
Yeah, which would be into that. I do feel like to go off of what you said, Beth, for a totally different reason. Like, I also wanted there to be the portrayal of hockey in this episode is so interesting.
Please tell us all about it because neither of us watch it.
Jamie also said she had questions about hockey, and so I want to answer those as well. But like this hockey episode being centered around like the concept of enforcers was such a choice, and like I do wish that there had been a little more like actual hockey that was like more hockey than just like I went to a like there's a joke in hockey of like when there's a lot of fights they like. You know, I went to a fight and a hockey game broke out. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the joke. And they kind of play off of that and they say it later on in the episode where they say hockey is just something that happens in between the fights, which I thought was a fun, like, play on that phrase that I've been hearing since I was, like, little.
Yeah. And I think the key thing and the reason why they focus so much on the enforcers this episode is that it is a problem. Basically,
yes.
The owner of the team has realized that he can monetize the fights. So he is doing everything in his power to incentivize the fighting so he can increase the revenue. So it's like he's created this purposefully toxic environment where this is the expectation, despite the fact it's not actually the best.
No. And like, okay, but like fighting in hockey is so interesting. And like I mainly watch, to like give context, I mainly watch like National Hockey League hockey. I watch some minor league stuff, but I watch mostly National Hockey League hockey, which is like the big hockey league in Canada and the United States. And fighting does happen in the league fairly often. And it is like a tactic slash it is a crowd favorite. Like I was watching my home team's like season opener and less than 5 minutes in, one of a player on our team that you would probably call like an enforcer. Like he's not just an enforcer, but you probably call him an enforcer. And he picked a fight with someone. And the crowd was super loud and super into it. And it was a, like, energizing piece in the team. So, like, it's still, like, a very acceptable thing.
I have a question on this. So, and this is because, like, if I'm not a sports girly, I think I don't have to really prove that point. I'm not a sports girly. If I was going to go to, like, live sport, I would go to the AFL because it's like a really good atmosphere. Like, you know, it's, you know, the national, you know, sort of spirit of it, I suppose.
Yeah. I've heard that. Like, yeah. It's a really good atmosphere.
Like, even if you're not a sports person, if you're coming to visit Australia, like, and you want to like immerse yourself in the culture, I feel like a footy game is not a bad,
see,
you know, but
I agree. AFL is more like stereotypical Aussie, but I prefer to go to a cricket game.
Oh, I think cricket's fucking boring. I think it's boring as hell. So that's
like every summer growing up.
Okay.
We have like season passes to the state team. Like,
okay. Yeah. My family was definitely a footy family, but.
Oh, we're a footy family too. Yeah.
But the thing for me is with this particular episode and like the violence, right? Because like the footy is like, it's a contact sport and like it's not like American football where like everyone's in like padding and fucking helmets and shit. Like these,
yeah, you're wearing nothing. You have no protection.
No, basically.
We once horrified some tourists in France by getting them to watch like
yeah, like a highlight reel of like, you know,
like football, literally. Like football or rugby, like are both terrifying to watch. And I say that as someone who like watches hockey, which is like a really high contact sport.
Yeah,
but yeah, again, padding, like
padding, players yeah, wear right.
So much.
Have you
padding.
Seen any AFL?
I don't know if I've actually seen AFL, oh, other than maybe a few little, I've seen, like, European football. Yeah.
Not the same.
Not,
the
I've and, been
like,
not
even close.
I've been injured in AFL, and I was in the crowd. practice kicks before the game and one flew over the net and hit me in the fucking face.
I've seen rugby though, both like live and televised, and rugby I think maybe is also like
rugby is quite aggressive too.
Yeah.
But I think
not like football though.
Yeah.
Football is really aggressive in a very chaotic way.
Yeah. They're like bouncing off each other like ping pong balls, you know? Like, you know when you play pinball and it's like
bing, yeah. Bing,
that's kind of the vibe. But the thing about it that I, this is kind of where we got on a tangent, but my question comes back to like in footy, right? If there's some kind of contact, normally it's like someone's gone to like take a mark, which is basically when you just catch the ball, right? And someone is trying to like intercept it or like whatever. And that's where you get a lot of the contact.
Pull a specky.
Yeah. You know, and so it's very like specific situations and there's typically not actual fighting. Mm-hmm. Like you might both go down and there might be like a shove or whatever. Like if you're they're a bit pissed, but no one's fucking throwing punches. And if they are, they shut that down real fucking quick. Right. Mm-hmm. And my question is the hockey fighting more like soccer when someone gets lightly tapped and they fucking fall down and they're like crying like they need an ambulance, but they're actually just putting on a show to get a free kick? Like, is that more like, is it performative or are they like actually genuinely fighting? Because I was watching this and I was like, this kind of feels like people who are really into like wrestling. And I'm like, I'm not that kind of girly, but I know some people are. But I'm also pretty sure that some of that is literally just like performance art. Like, it's not so much sport in the sense of like they're actually injuring each other. It's more sport like theater.
Yeah, they basically took being a stuntman and made it like,
yeah,
a sport.
So like, is it like, are they actually having a punch up on the ice or is it literally just like kind of like soccer or like WWE kind of thing?
Kind of depends. Like in my life, I have seen both. I've seen ones where like both players are actually just real pissed. I would say it probably airs more on the like performative end of like they do talk in the episode about like enforcers are, their role is to like intimidate, their role is to like ensure that they keep order and you know, you don't, you're afraid to fight one of them so you don't. Like, the whole idea of an enforcer.
Killing's theory of rational deterrence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, like, that's kind of true, but there's also a piece of, like, enforcers and, like, fights in general. Not even just enforcers, but, like, fights in general get the crowd worked up, they get your team worked up. There's a little bit of the, like, someone laid a hit you didn't like, so now you're going to fight them. Like, someone laid a hit on your cat. Like, usually, like, one of your high, like, star players, someone laid a kind of dodgy hit on them and maybe it didn't get called as a penalty and so now you're gonna fight them. I would say more performative, but kind of can vary.
It's a fight, but they make a spectacle out of it.
Yes,
like, and it's still a fight at the end of the day.
And like, there is, you do get like penalty providing you get like in the NHL and most of the junior leagues and the like minor leagues, you get like a 5-minute penalty, which like most infractions get you a 2-minute penalty. So you get a 5-minute penalty for fighting. In European leagues, you can get like ejected from a game for fighting. In North American leagues, you don't. There are rules around fighting. So you have to drop your sticks because they are a weapon.
Yeah.
So you have to drop them. And you also have to drop your gloves so that you can't hit with like the hardness of your glove.
Okay. Cause I was gonna say that seems weird because they'd be padded, but I guess like if you're hitting the ice, they're gonna have like a hard outer.
Yeah. So you see it in the episode where like he like flings his gloves to the ice.
And he's like, someone drop yours, I wanna fight you, except for Elliot's already gone around and really horrifically stereotyped some Canadians.
Oh my word, I found that so funny, especially since the name they gave him was a French-Canadian name. Like, they gave him a French-Canadian name to imply that he's French-Canadian, and then he just goes around and, like, makes jabs at, like, Canadian stereotypes. I thought it was actually very funny. Yeah, and you also, like, you are not allowed, like, you're not supposed to remove your own helmet because of head injury, and that can increase your penalty minutes, but you also like have to listen to the refs basically. So refs will let fights go on until like someone drops someone else, or like particularly if one player drops the other one and their helmet flies off, then the refs will like immediately step in and pull them apart. And if you don't like listen to the refs when they're pulling you apart, then you get a game misconduct and you get like potential suspension. You can get suspended or like fined for a fight.
It's really interesting. That's kind of why I wanted to ask, because it's funny for me to hear that, like, there are the rules to hockey and then there's the rules to fighting within hockey. Like,
yes,
it's bizarre to me that, like, it is such a common occurrence that they're like, okay, we're gonna let this happen, but we have to have some ground rules. So, like, we can't just stop you from punching each other because everyone kind of likes it, so we'll let you do it, but just like within limits, you know.
Anyway, the episode,
anyway, you're gonna have to cut so much of that.
Oh, yeah. Another thing I wanted to say, I'm gonna say one more thing about, like, enforcers versus, because I actually thought it was really interesting in the episode itself. They kind of express, and I'm sorry, I don't remember all the characters' names, so I'm gonna get.
I never remember the character names.
Do you remember the five main characters? Like Parker, Elliot, Sophie, Nate,
Hardison.
Yeah, I mean, I know who they all are when you say them like that, but yeah. I'm not necessarily gonna remember what each of them.
You're fine. Says. I never remember who, like, whoever the, like, villain of the week is. I never know their name. Literally never. No, I usually go through 40 minutes into our discussion before Jamie says the name, and I'm like, cool, cool, cool. That's what their name is.
Yeah. Anyway, two of the characters, one says, you know, enforcers exist to protect Eli players, your Gretzky's, your Crosby's, you know, they intimidate, they keep order, which Gretzky and Crosby are two, like, iconic. I don't know if they're either of those were names you recognize. I actually wanted to ask that.
Mm-mm, no.
No. They are both, like, two of the best all-time. Wayne Gretzky is, like, league, like...
I figured it was a reference that went straight over my head.
Crosby still plays. Crosby is an active player. Gretzky is retired. Crosby, I've been watching play since I was little.
That longevity, because this was from back in 2014.
Crosby is like what would be considered like a generational talent. Like he says, like, you know, this is why enforcers exist. They're important. You know, you're afraid of them, so you don't mess with star players. But Sophie says, like, no, like, goons are more this, like, it's just a battle that grinds the hockey to a halt so two thugs can slug it out, which is actually kind of the two opinions on fighting in the NHL and, like, fighting in hockey. Like, boiled down, like, they're more complex than that, but that's kind of boiled down, is, like, enforcers are necessary. Enforcers are, like, necessary, and they're doing an important thing, and enforcers are, like, fights in hockey are just pulling from, like, the actual game. And I kind of land somewhere in the middle where I'm like, I don't mind a little bit of fighting, but I don't want, like, that to
it's pull not layer from the game.
Yeah, and it's there have been teams I've watched, or, like, teams my team has played against, where it's been a team full of, like, really heavy hitters, where they're more likely to fight, where they're more physical in, like, a little bit on the edge of almost dirty play. And I don't tend to like those teams. I prefer teams with, like, a lot more, like, skill and speed and, like, technique. I think they're more interesting to watch. I think that's better hockey. But I'm not, like, a proponent of, like, get rid of all the hockey fighting. Anyway, but I just thought it was interesting that they expressed both of those opinions on fighting and hockey. Because are actually two kind of camps.
And it's interesting, I think, that it's Sophie and Nate who are giving those opposing views, because, like, not that you would know, but, like, as characters, like, Nate and Sophie are really good at opposing each other and, like, sort of constantly being in a I'm right kind of, like,
dynamic. Okay, I got that vibe from them.
Yeah, so they're very, like, old married couple sort of, like, energy. And so I thought it was interesting, like, this episode, they obviously have these opposing views, but also the whole episode, there's that running joke of Sophie being like, I don't even remember where I put the Stanley Cup. And Nate being like, okay, but, like, where the fuck is it?
He's so concerned about where the real Stanley Cup is, which, like, fair. Also, so funny. Like, I love that they didn't come straight out. I don't even think they actually say Stanley Cup, like, those two words in a row until, like, basically the end of the episode. They just sort of imply it's a Stanley Cup.
She's like, I stole a certain
trophy.
Trophy. Which, like, to be fair, like, no. The Stanley Cup, I feel like, would be not actually that easy to steal, but, like, the Stanley Cup, like, I don't know if you know this, but, like, if your team wins the Stanley Cup, one of the rituals is that every single player on the team gets a day with the Stanley Cup. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Which is why they make the joke that Vlad doesn't need to steal the Stanley Cup. He's had it in his lounge room twice.
Well, Sanders do the dumbest shit with the Stanley Cup.
We have this bear, and if it was your birthday, you could take the class bear home, and you'd, like, have it for the weekend, and you do, like, a little photo shoot of the adventures you did with the bear, and that's, like, what this is giving. It's, like, the adult man sports version of my bear.
I have seen the funniest pictures of, like, grown, like, 35-year-old men doing the stupid, like, they'll take it fishing, or they'll take it and, like,
drink soup out
of
that.
It, or, like, eat soup. Like, one of them, I think, ate Fruit Loops out of it a couple years ago. Like, literally, like, poured milk and Fruit Loops into the Stanley Cup and ate milk and Fruit Loops out of it. People have dented it because they got too excited and dropped it and dented it. It's very, very funny.
That is fun.
Very silly. And yeah, very, very, I would assume, I mean, not actually that easy to steal. It comes with a whole, its own handler and all that. But it's, yeah.
Sophie could do it.
Sophie's good.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I have another point, but I also don't want to go on.
We are learning so much about hockey today.
So they talk, and this was one of my pet peeves, and I was like, I was looking for it the second time. So early on in the episode, they say, like, this is the fifth game of a 7-game series. That's typical in playoffs. Or like,
I also have no idea what fucking playoffs are or what any of this,
like, a tournament. It's usually, like, at the end of your season, the top teams in the league, you know, in the NHL, it's like the top 16 teams out of 32 go into basically like a tournament. So the
finals in footy.
Yeah. It's probably like slightly different in terms of like its actual format, but basically it's like four rounds. And if you win a round, you move on to the next round,
like, until brackets.
It's brackets. Brackets. That's the word. And so my thing with this episode is that they don't say anything about how this tournament works, because like if you're minor leagues, it might be like less rounds or whatever. But they say it's the fifth game of a 7-game series. They don't say who's winning. Like, there's no information, which I was like, why is there no information? And then they say, oh yeah, like there's like this two more games in this year and the season is over. And I'm like, okay, but like if you're in a tournament, either your season is going to be over because you're eliminated, or your season is going to be over because you won. And which is it? They give no information.
Do you know what's really interesting actually about that point? Because I think that it like kind of builds into what I was saying before about like this episode doesn't have the same team dynamics that I'm used to. And like one of the things that I thought, like what I was kind of expecting once I like got into the episode and I was like, oh, okay, like I see kind of what they're doing here. One of the tactics that they use a fair bit in the show is that they will like hijack like a TV network or something, or like they'll use radio, or they'll have some, like in this episode they actually like say that like Hardison like did like an online, you know, he spread information online, like, which is like,
yeah, sure, I love that. That was really fun.
Yeah, which is very fun. But what I was kind of expecting was like some kind of sports commentator, like, you know, like I was expecting them to inseminate this like idea of like, you know, pushing Elliot as this up and comer. Like I was expecting that to be more present, and it really
and it was
wasn't.
Just a little. It was like one scene, and then all of a sudden they were like, and now he's in the team. But also it seemed like the team was meeting him when he first stepped on the ice, and I was like, that's not.
Yeah, like, and Hardison has like previously like been a weatherman and like being like they pulled into local radio and like been like
the one that's coming to mind is actually in the baseball episode. They spread a rumor that the team is moving locations, like they're changing stadiums. And so what they do is they ring all of the local sports radio stations and be like, how do you feel about this rumor that's been going around that this team is moving? It just sounds like random people are ringing in concerned that this team's moving.
And it's based in nothing. There's not been an announcement or anything. But like, if you hear it, you're like, oh, I heard on the radio this thing. Like, have you heard about this? And so people start talking.
Oh, I love and, like, that. Such a good plot point.
Yeah, it was like, it's really effective. And one of the things that Leverage does really well, generally speaking, like as a show, is showing how things would actually work, and sort of like you can understand like, oh, okay, if I was just listening to the radio, I would fully be like, I would fall for what they're doing, you know, like, and you can see how it would actually like practically work. I feel like this episode there are enough kind of holes where it feels like they dropped the ball on that a little bit. And again, I don't know if it's because it feels so disjointed because like the team isn't really altogether.
I want to get to know more of the team. Like, why don't we get to know literally any other player on the team?
Yeah.
Like, I would have loved to have seen some more, like, some more, just more fleshing out of that. They did a lot more of the, like, World Cup, World League sort of hijinks. And I was like, okay, sure. But, like, the hockey simultaneously feels like, that feels like hockey. And then also, like, really doesn't at times, where I'm like, you just miss some details. Like, what's the score in this tournament? Like, how does the, when you introduce, you also would not, I don't know how all the minor leagues work, but like typically,
August is putting on their academic hat.
Typically, there is a trade deadline / an acquisitions deadline before the playoffs, before any tournament, and you cannot add new players or trade players after that deadline. So then adding, like, you can call up someone from, like, your minor league team if you have an injury, but you can't bring a new person into your organization.
That is what has always confused me about this episode, because
yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
I have no idea how hockey works, but I was assuming that it's not the sort of thing where you can just sign a random new player mid-season and they're just playing the next game
And also, can mid-season, not mid-tournament.
Like, they just made their team bigger without, like...
Well,
like, who's it replacing?
You would still have to, like, yeah, you would still... Then you would be benching someone. And that does happen in, like, NHL hockey, where, like, players get signed and traded all through the year. You can literally get traded in November and, like, 2 days later be playing with a new team. But there's a deadline in March where it's the trade deadline, and so it's a big event and lots of trades happen. But after that point, you cannot change your roster. You can change who you, like, play, because you always have more players on your team than players.
You've always got a bench.
Yeah, you've always got a bench. But you can't, like, sign a new player in April right before the playoff. You can't even do it before the playoffs. There's, like, 3 weeks in between, 3-4 weeks in between the trade deadline and the playoffs starting. You definitely can't add someone in the middle of a series, like 5 games into a 7-game series. They're just adding this random person from the Caribou League, which is obviously not a real league. And
it's fiction in the show as well, because everyone's like, I've never heard of that league.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's done a Google search in their life in this episode.
This isn't an issue I sometimes pick on Leverage, because Jamie's answer is always the same. So I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. I was like, it's not possible. And she's like, no, Hardison's taken care of it. I'm like, you can't just say whenever there's a fucking plot hole that Hardison has just fixed it somehow.
That's 2 days. He's created an entire league.
Yeah, literally.
Plausible players and teams and history.
He is on Wikipedia. He is making changes.
I love the belief in Hardison. He does seem capable of, like, quite a lot. That seems a little far.
No, valid. I know this is maybe asking a lot, but I think maybe we should move off from hockey in a minute. I do have, like, one other question, though. At the very end of the episode, which was honestly, like, a really weird way for them to end the episode too. Like, not only did they focus a lot on violence this episode, which I understand was part of the thematics, like, it was the point of, like, the plot of this episode, so I get it. It was just a lot comparatively to, like, how they would normally run stuff. At the end of the episode, one of the closing scenes, Nate basically goes to talk to the guy, and he's saying, like, you know, we fucked you up, basically. Like, you're just going to have to live with that now. And he signs away the rights to the team and, like, signs over ownership to the team players. And I'm like, okay, I love that. Like, yes, own your own labor. Fucking what a win, okay? Love to see it.
Yeah, me too. That was really cute and fun.
Yeah, but the thing that confused me was they were all in suits and I couldn't figure out why. And then they all...
For the aesthetics,
hockey players, it is a big thing, hockey players and, like, wearing suits.
Okay.
Like, that is a, like, if you're not playing that night, you will wear a suit to the game. There's always, like, press shots when you're, like, arriving on a road game of, like, the players with their suitcases walking into the arena with their fancy suits. That's, like, so that part was...
All right, so that actually has a purpose, because I was like, why?
It's a hockey thing.
But then... The thing that confused me the most, and I really want to know if you have an answer to this. So at the end, like, they're doing this, like, intimidation tactic, which, again, is kind of out of place for Leverage. Well, normally if they're doing an intimidation thing, it's typically, like, a psychological intimidation. This was like, hi, I have 20 dudes here and they're going to beat you the fuck up. And I was like, that's weird. Like, that's usually the way Leverage handles things.
Okay.
But,
yeah, good to
know. Then... They were just, like, clacking their little sticks.
Okay.
Why? It was so distracting and annoying. I was like, this must be your point. Because it's all I can fucking hear. I have no idea what the dialogue was. Because all I can hear was clack, 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 clack. Okay. And I was like, it cannot just be me.
So this is how you show support in hockey. So if you've just scored, like, if you've just scored... players will, like, who are sitting on the bench will, like, lean over the bench and, like, tap their sticks in, like, celebration.
Okay, okay.
It's a celebration tactic. It's a,
so,
like,
when Nate punches the guy out, they're like, oh, tap, tap, tap. We liked that.
That's all that it means. means. It like okay. Sometimes players will like tap each other like if it's a teammate, you might tap someone gently with your stick to just be like, oh yeah, great job. Like it's sort of the opposite of like slashing someone with your stick, which is like, I want to take you down, which also happens a lot when you kick someone with your stick or you slash someone. But yeah, no, the stick tap is a celebration.
Okay, because I
thought it was a good hockey moment. It was very specific, and I was like, oh yeah, that's exactly how hockey players would show.
I would like to thank you right now, August, because I've always just assumed that that means something in hockey, and now you've confirmed it for me and made Beth look insane, so that's really great for me.
Well, I have never thought of it as a weird thing. I just, like, watched it, and I made a note, literally have a note, and it's saying the stick tapping is nice. Like, it for me, like, to the authenticity of
why
this
why are
episode.
They clacking their sticks?
It's the equivalent of a little, like, clap, but they can't clap because they're wearing gloves.
It's so funny. Oh, because they're wearing gloves. You're so right. Because, do you ever, I don't know if this is a thing that's specific to, like, Australia, but, like, one of the things they taught us specifically in, like, kindergarten and, like, early years primary school is, like, when you're clapping, because, you know, kids will, like, clap for a fucking ever and really loud or whatever, is they teach you fairy claps, which is, like, two fingers to the palm, and it's, like, much more, like, little and subtle or whatever. And all I could think was, like, it just sounds like they're all fairy clapping. Like, it just sounds like they're doing little fairy claps. And I was like, it's so weird. Like, they just punch this guy out and they're like, oh, yeah, some sort of polite applause. I couldn't wrap my head around it.
Fine. I'm going to find a video of some players doing that in a real context because
that's just going to be transformed into, like, hockey shit.
It has a name. It's called a stick tap. Like, it's got its own name. That's the tradition.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we need to talk about Vlad.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask, is Vlad a reference to an actual hockey person? Or is that just...
He's a reference to a type of hockey player. Like, a really skilled Russian hockey player. Mm-hmm. I went and made sure it wasn't, like... This is a fake hockey player. A type of hockey player from he probably played in like the 80s and 90s, and like they say he's won 3 cups, and like he felt like a lot of retired Russian hockey players that I've like seen in interviews, and this was kind of fun. I liked the inclusion of like I also the reactions of everyone to him where they're just all like starry eyed was I was like, yeah, that checks out.
I love the fact that Sophie is like, we can just bring my friend Vlad on for this, like, you know. And then they meet Vlad, and he's like, you didn't say he played hockey. And she's like, oh, he played like a little hockey. And he's like, oh.
And then they're all fanboying so hard. They fanboy so hard over him, and it's very funny.
It's very fun. I also love him immediately saying to Nate, are you causing Sophie problems? And August, this won't mean anything to you, but Jimmy, my note is ha 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 ha, bro, you don't know the half of it.
What is happening? What is their relationship? And I couldn't figure it out by the end of the episode, and the second time I watched, I could figure it out more.
You know when people ask if Destiel is canon, and it's like, God, I wish there was an easy answer to that.
You've clarified this so well in one sentence.
Literally, I started season one and I was like, I will never like this couple because Nate is a piece of shit and Sophie could do 1 million times better and I love her with every fiber of my being. And then by season two, I was like, oh no. Oh no, they're going to make me like it. And now I like it. But
okay, so you are very supposed to brief rundown. Essentially, before they formed the team, Sophie was an art thief. Nate basically investigated stolen paintings for a living as part of the insurance claims
process. Oh, yes.
So they've been like cat and mouse for years and years and years and years, except for Nate was married with a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Nate's kid then died, meant that his marriage broke up, and then they formed the team. And so then he specifically chose Sophie to be the grifter on the team for a whole number of reasons. And then they've kind of been like, they're in love with each other. They have been in love with each other since day fucking dot.
Yeah.
But they've just been refusing to acknowledge it until about the start of the season.
It's very much the, like, will they, won't they, but it's inevitable. Like, the inevitable will they, won't they. Mm-hmm. They will, you know, but they're...
Which is the vibe I definitely got from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is sort of the most, I don't know, stable and consistent their relationship has been. The whole series, like, it's very clear that they're going to be endgame. The dynamic is typically like Nate and Sophie sit there as like mom and dad, and then like Parker, Harvest, and Elliot are like their three adopted children kind of thing. Like that's typically the energy. And yeah, Nate and Sophie are interesting. They're very much, they're the type of couple who are antagonistic towards each other, but at the end of the day, like it's like friendly banter. It's not, there's not really heat in it. They just like kind of teasing each other a lot.
Yeah. The whole Stanley Cup bit was sort of a lot of that, and I thought that was really cute. Like,
they're both very strong personalities, which means that they they're in competition a lot, but in like a, ultimately at the end of the day, they like,
they match each other really well. Like, yeah, they are equals in every sort of sense.
Yeah, they sort of need each other to challenge each other because everyone else is like too much of an easy target, I guess. Like, Nate is one of the only people who knows if Sophie's playing a game. Like, he can see when she's acting, when everyone else will fall for it kind of thing. But also in the inverse, like, if he's not coping, she knows. Like, they just know each other so well.
Oh, that's a dangerous kind of ship. That's one yeah. that you get really attached to.
And it's very much...
very Jess Dale of them.
Oh, dude, you have no fucking idea. Sophie's jacket at the very end of this episode, the white one, fucking beautiful. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It was excellent. And also, at some point, was Vlad wearing two watches? I didn't go back to check, but I swear to God, he had like two chunky fucking like Rolex looking things, one on each wrist. It was wild. I was like, this man has too much money.
I have never specifically.
I mean, he's a hockey player. Hockey players, retired. Yeah, like contracts are obscene.
Sophie pays him for his work here as well. Like.
I love that he's got like a side hustle going of like criminal standards.
His work is basically to show up and be an ex-hockey player. Like that's basically his whole job in this episode, just stand there and like.
He's essentially like a celebrity endorsement. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah. Which is also like very funny when I think about like hockey players and what they sometimes end up doing after hockey. Like it's, yeah, it fits. It works. It's funny.
And also just the energy between like him, Nate, and Sophie. Mm-hmm. Iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Oh, I love, it's giving, again, some Destiel-ish sort of vibe. Like, I can't say some more details for that, but.
Yes, this entire episode is so funny for me in how they bring Vlad in, because they clearly bring Vlad in as like, oh, here's like a romantic rival to Nate for Sophie. Like, you know, he fully walks in, makes out with Sophie a little bit, which like, iconic.
That was wild. I was like, what is happening?
You're like, okay.
And then he threatens Nate.
And a little bit of a cultural piece there, which I'm not sure how I feel about, but.
Yeah, I was the same. I was like, why are they just kissing now? I was like, Nate and Sophie are about as committed as they're ever going to get. Mm-hmm. I don't know why she's just kissing this other guy with no preamble. Like, he just walks in and it's just like, hello.
I mean, to be fair, that's probably the nature of the relationship when they worked last. Like, worked
but like. You don't walk into a room, see your ex and go, hey, just kiss them full on the mouth.
No, like checking in about like, you know.
And then we do have the very rapid, Nate and Sophie and Vlad. And it goes from sort of like Vlad and Sophie third wheeling Nate to Nate and Vlad fully third wheeling Sophie.
Which is so funny.
It is very fun. Nate's wife or ex-wife rather, Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
And Sophie are like besties, and that is so funny to me personally. Oh, I love to see it. So for me, it was like, oh, this is fun because now Nate has
like his shoes on the other foot.
I think they should introduce Maggie to Vlad. I think actually that is the dynamic that we need.
Also, we stand Maggie in this house. Like Maggie, Nate's ex-wife, is
icon.
She is so good. She is so incredible. Like.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite characters of all time.
Actually, speaking of Nate, I wanted to touch on the fact that they fucking finally had someone react to Nate just fucking talking out loud. Like, August, this is one of my biggest pet peeves with Leverage, but they will speak. Like, they've got, like, little comms in their ears that, like, obviously, like, you know,
got that.
They're communicating. But they will always just be fucking walking around, speaking out loud, totally normally, not trying to cover their mouths,
so
not whispering.
It's the Sam and Dean talking about cases in
literally
in broad daylight.
Like, and in this episode, he's standing right next to the mark and he's just saying shit out loud. And fucking finally, they had the mark turn to him and go, what?
I was like, he's like the ref.
I was like, yes, Thank you for calling him out. And also, Vlad, sorry, when the Marv is speaking to him and, like, Nate speaks in Russian to Vlad, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, as if they're pretending they don't know the Marv can speak Russian. And I was like, oh, that's very clever, you know. But then he fully says to Nate that his accent is garbage. And I was like, I love that they are calling Nate out so hard this episode, yeah. because he also is terrible at accents. Like,
oh, I like that. That's a run. I like that even more now, because I thought that was funny.
Basically, in the first, like, context, 3 seasons, you can tell Nate's playing a character because he has a weird hat and a bad accent
every single fucking time. That's, like, the only character he knows how to play is weird hat, bad accent.
And absolutely the most annoying person you've ever fucking met.
Yeah, his tactic is basically just, like, I'm going to annoy you so much, you're not going to notice what I'm doing.
So Sophie's tactic is, I'm going to make you fall in love with me a little bit, so you're going to do whatever I say because you're in love with me. Yeah. Nate's tactic is, what if I annoy them to the point they no longer think through their decisions and do whatever the fuck I want them to do because they're so annoyed?
Nate's like, I'm going to piss you off so much that you're going to sign the dotted line just to shut me the fuck up.
It gives me buy my silence permanently for 8,000 points.
Genuinely. Oh, okay. I did want to touch on something that Sophie said this episode that I did kind of be like, okay. Which was the moment when she and Hardison are looking over the actual medical records, not the ones that have been doctored. And she goes, the next blow to the head that Craig Marco takes could be his last. And I was like, okay, babe, we get it with the melodrama. Like, we get it. You're an actor. But, like, it was a bit much for me.
Yeah, I mean, like, concussions we get are it. A thing in, like, yeah. They're mm-hmm. definitely a thing in hockey that does take players out. But yeah, it was a touch dramatic.
A touch, it was just that little bit for me over
also,
the edge.
Also, did push,
I don't know, and, like, I know that this is the whole point of this episode, but it did push the believability limits a little.
Yeah.
Like, how badly injured he was playing, because I'm like, there's no way it would not be, like, more, if you had taken this, because it was also, like, just the concussion piece, I was like, okay, the doctoring the records makes sense. And then later on,
it was like the spine and the enlarged part.
Yeah, and I'm like, you would not be, get it. You are not, there's no way you're taking the kind of, even gentle hits, even gentle, like, boarding or, like, cross checks.
Yeah. Or, like, just general play.
See, because what I've always assumed with this episode is that, like, the team doctor is not only doctoring the records, but also, like, giving him pretty heavy painkillers.
Mm.
So they're, like, you know, like, it's not just, like, they're not just doctoring the records. They're also...
Yeah, that's true.
The thing that broke my emotion in this episode, though, is not the thing that you guys didn't find believable. For me, it's when he's walking out to go and talk to Marco, like, outside by the car, and the roller door's going down. No roller door moves that fast. It's, like... up and then it's down and it's done, and I'm like, that's not how fast roller doors work.
I actually put a note that I fucking loved that shot. I loved Elliot being backlit. I was like, wow, yeah, this is beautiful.
It was a good
it's a beautiful, like, shot, but no roller door moves that quickly.
I
wondered if it was one of those ones, like,
maybe it's manual, not automatic. I
didn't
see anyone pull it down. So
I also,
like,
didn't see anyone pull it down.
It might just be, like, there to the side and out of the shop, but, like...
Yeah, because I was going to say the same thing. I was like, no fucking auto one is going to go down that quickly. But if it's a manual one, you can pull it down five, yeah, 3 times faster than that. But yes, no, I loved that shot of Elliot. I thought it was very fun. And it was very, like... It gave him a really interesting quality, especially because, like, this episode, he's kind of playing the protector in, like, multiple senses. Like, he's not only playing the game, but he's also playing the game with a second objective, which is to stop Craig from getting hit. And, like, also the third objective of, like, psychologically, like, convincing their team to, like, not touch him kind of thing. And so I was like, it's interesting that he's got, like, this kind of halo effect happening around him, because he is kind of acting as, like, the guardian angel in this sense. Mm-hmm. But... one thing that I will say, while we're kind of on the topic of stuff that, like, pulled us out of the episode a little bit, I think that one of the other things that was really interesting about this episode and different comparatively to what Leverage normally does, for a little bit of context, August, Leverage very commonly will do this tactic where they essentially gaslight the Marv into looking crazy. Like, basically, like, they have been playing with the Marv, playing with their head. They convince them of a scenario that doesn't happen. Like, there's literally an episode where they convince a guy that he is in the epicenter of, like, a huge disease outbreak. Like, it's crazy. Like, they have him in a hospital and he is fully convinced that he is living through the zombie apocalypse. There is nothing going on. They've just convinced him of that through, like, different tactics, right?
And they convince him so much that he literally gets a nosebleed.
Yeah, like, you know, and so there's a couple of different examples of it through the series, and they're very, very good at it. And so they usually will, like, make the mark either think they're insane or convince them of a scenario so effectively that the mark then looks insane when they try to explain it to, like, law enforcement kind of thing. So it's, like, it's very much, you know, in Brooklyn Nine-Nine when they're trying to get out of the hospital and they've got, I think Bob is his name, the FBI agent saying, like, no, I'm an FBI agent, like, you have to help me. And then Gina goes, and I'm Serena Williams, you know, and it's like, it's kind of that.
Okay.
But this episode, what I thought was really kind of a flip on that was that because Elliot had convinced all of those other team players not to fight Craig, when he starts skating around and taking off his gloves and putting his stick down and telling everyone to fight him, he kind of looks like the person who's lost it a bit. And, like, it was really interesting to me because, like, they're, number one, kind of calling out how insanely normalized the violence is. As soon as the audience isn't cheering, he looks like he is off his nut. Like, through the rest of the episode, it was so normalized. The crowd was obsessed with it. All the team, like, were getting into it. And so, like, it was really interesting to me because I was like, they've made the person they're helping kind of, like, they've put them in the position they would normally put the mark in. And it was really interesting to me. And I couldn't quite figure out what the commentary was. Like, I was like, they're making a point. But I don't know enough about the culture of hockey and the violence that's ingrained in it to really understand it. And yeah. Then, like, having his son stand there and him, like, have the eye contact with his son and then he puts the gloves back on. I was like, I feel like I'm getting the gist of it, but I feel like I am missing something.
And I think they just didn't actually develop that character enough, or his relationship with his son or, yeah, like, his teammates. I feel like that would have maybe made that moment not feel just so, like, he's just standing in the middle of the, like, a rink, being like trying to get everyone to fight him.
Yeah,
like, I don't know, it's really, I didn't love how much this episode, like, kind of said, like, hockey. And again, this is also, like, a different era of hockey, like, when this episode, I don't know what year this episode came out in.
I think it's 2014.
Okay, yeah, so hockey has, like, shifted a bit, but even then,
yeah, it's,
like,
been 10 years.
And, like, that's the other thing, because he's not wanting to fight because, you know, someone's thrown one of his players. Like, he's not doing it as a protective thing.
No.
It's an offensive thing. It's I want to get my bonus. And to do that, I have to fight in every single game of the season.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, also, like, to that point as well, when Elliot confronts him, I thought this was really interesting for Elliot to have a scene about this, because Elliot and kids is, like, almost like Dean and kids, like, in terms of the way that the characters relate, right? He's, yeah, always very protective. He will normally, like, gravitate towards child characters and be very, like, specifically making sure there aren't children in any harm's way kind of thing. And so it was interesting that when Elliot, like, sort of, they have that confrontation and Craig says, I know you don't have a kid because you just did your level best to scare me and you didn't mention my kid once. And I understand his point, like, because he's basically saying to Elliot, you don't understand, I'm doing this for my child. I'm doing this because I get the payout and then I'm able to finance my kid, right? Which I get. But I also think it's a really short-sighted view because it's like, okay, but what you are putting your body through to get to that endpoint is potentially going to put you in a position where you can't actually look after your kid.
Yeah, like, I didn't quite, like, get the, it was, I was finding the character motivations not quite working for me. I need, yeah, more from that character to, like, fully believe that,
yeah,
you know, that he hadn't considered that, like,
if you're dead, you can't look after your kid. Doesn't matter if your kid is $500,000, like,
yeah, exactly. He's a fucking child.
Or if your cognitive abilities are, like, if you get so many concussions that, like, you're not able to function.
Yeah. And his kid is also very clearly already in a position where he's having to look after his dad, which is, like, just something that you, like, I mean, as you get older, like, you might assume that eventually you would be looking after your parents, you know, based on just general decline or, like, health issues and stuff, that, like, you know, that caring role sort of shifts over time. That's, like, relatively natural. But, like, he, I'm going to assume, is still a minor. And, like, yeah, theoretically,
that was also,
like,
clear to me, but yeah, I think so.
I was assuming somewhere around the, like, 14, 15, 16, 17.
Yeah, I was,
like,
thinking high school, right?
Yeah.
But, like, he's already, like, going into the change room and being like, Dad, like, you forgot to get changed, or, like, you know, having to explain to him, no, Dad, Mom died 3 years ago. Like, he's already looking after his parent to an extent that, like, there should be other care support in place. Like, this child should not be the sole responsible person in this situation, and there's no indication that there is any other support. And I understand why, because of, like, obviously the medical records are being doctored and, like, whatnot, they're not seeking those external supports. But, like, it just seems, obviously this guy is not in his right mind, but yeah, I don't know, I feel like this episode, I feel like it would have functioned better as a two-part episode. I think just
there
because
there needed to be more. They're trying to do so many different storylines.
Yeah. And to be fair, Leverage usually does. Leverage episodes are, like, jam-packed. Like, I've said to Jamie before, I feel like sometimes, like, the reason I don't know, like, I don't follow the whole plot, or I forget what the fucking Mark's name is and stuff, is because it's, like, they're trying to put, like, a two-hour movie into a 40-minute television episode. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time it plays really well. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time it's just, like, super rapid fire, and there's, like, a lot of fun little details that you miss on the first watch, and you go back and you rewatch it, and it's, like, really fun to pick the things you missed and, like, see how it all unfolds. This episode, to me, felt like it was missing something, and that's part of why I was, like, I really wish this wasn't August's first example, because I think that they have done better versions of this episode before.
And that's, you know what, it's not going to keep me from watching other episodes, because the hockey piece pulled me in, and I did thoroughly enjoy this episode, even though, like, yeah, I agree that I think some of the stuff is a little underbaked and could use a little more, but I did still thoroughly, like, enjoy it, and it gave me hints of, like, things that I could see the show doing tighter and better. Also, sorry, this is a separate aside, but, like, I really liked the whole magnetizing the puck thing.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah.
So fun. Like, I watched it and I was like, how are they, like, when they set up the competition, I was like, how are they going to play this?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, you see players practice, and, like, no player hits a shot every time. Is he just banking on, like, I'm a better shot? And,
yeah, like, I have a note which was like, can Nate actually play hockey, or is this where the magnet comes in?
Well, and I didn't like think that part through. I was until it happened, and then I went, oh yes, I love this. I love the tie back.
And it does have one of my favorite moments in this episode, which is Hardison with the little, like, oven, with, like, the oven mitt, like, pulling him out, like, giving the wave, like.
Hardison was very charming, and I was like, this character is very fun. I definitely want to see more of him. I don't feel like there was enough of him in this episode.
Yeah, there's a lot. Again, like, this episode, they don't spend a lot of time actually functioning as a team.
Yeah.
Like, it's very individual, and it made me wonder if maybe there was some kind of scheduling conflict where, like, some of them had to be elsewhere, because it didn't feel...
They did see in season 5... all of the actors got more busy on, like, their other projects.
Yeah.
Which means that there are some episodes where, like, the all 5 aren't in the room necessarily at the same time, just because, like, scheduling, like...
Yeah, so they're, like, a very busy cast, which mm-hmm. I was watching this and I was like, I think that something must be happening, because it's weird that there's so little... Like, normally one of the strongest points in Leverage, I think, as a show, is that the cast, like, the cohesion mm-hmm. is just so good. Like, the ensemble performance work is phenomenal, and, like, I feel like it was just missing this episode, and it's a real bummer. Like, I think that this episode in its of itself, like, was a good way for them to utilize the fact that the cast couldn't all be necessarily together, but it is a bit of a it feels like a bit of a snag. Like, it's different to, like, the normal sort of layout, I guess.
And for me, I think of this episode as, like, a little bit disjointed.
Yeah.
Because I think what they did was really good. I think the fact that they put in just so much hockey into the hockey
yeah.
episode is really good. And the fact that they did show so much on the actual ice, a lot of TV shows would have just implied what happened
yeah,
on the ice
and
instead of actually showing.
I appreciated the, like, amount. And it felt other than the like emphasis on fighting, but that's obviously a story piece. Yeah. Like the actual, some of the actual shot hockey shots and like the skating around, I was like, this is fun. This feels like, yeah, I'm like, I'm buying that this is hockey.
Yeah. Yeah. But it just feels a bit disjointed. Because, yeah, you've got all of the hockey stuff, which is Elliot. And then you've got like the Nate, Sophie, Vlad stuff. Yeah. And then you've got the Parker Hardison stuff. And like all of the stuff is good individually.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't really tie together as tightly as a Leverage or like in a Leverage episode normally would.
As it often does.
There's normally a lot more overlap between what the characters are all doing individually, and normally that's almost the point. Like, normally the point is the overlap between, and how it all kind of works together, like one big machine. Like, this kind of felt like we were seeing lots of individual cogs and, like, they weren't actually connecting directly. It was all sort of, like, you know, sort of connected via proxy. But one of the things that I, like, in terms of the way that they shot the actual, like, hockey scenes, one of the things that I did note, what I thought was a bit funny, there's a moment where they hit the puck and it's, like, fully slow-mo, and I did think that was really funny.
Oh, the fucking puck off, like, slow-mo, yeah. I did not like that.
What a wild choice.
That was a bad choice.
But
so silly,
They also had what I thought they did really effectively, actually, because like obviously a lot of the point of this episode is about the violence and about the injuries that Craig has, and while they're on the ice and they're like really like getting in amongst the game, there's a lot of shots that come from the bottom, like, and looking up, so it makes the like crowd feel like big and imposing. There's obviously like a lot of banging on the like plexiglass, which I assume is just like
that's a normal
yeah, exactly, yeah. And
even
so
in a non-fighty sort of game, that's normal.
And so, you know, there's banging on the glass, there's also a lot of bright lights, the camera movements are really quick a lot of the time, and there's just so much happening. I think that it does really well to sort of give the audience the feeling of being disorientated and being a bit overwhelmed and being like, oh, I can't really keep track of what's happening in the game and the audience and with Nate. And all of the sort of shots that you get of the players are typically like close up on their face. So like you can see what their like expression is, but you can't really tell what's happening around them. And I thought that that was actually like really, really effective in considering the overall theme of like concussion this episode, like having the flashing lights and the shouting and the disorientation and, you know, that felt like a really fun visual way to tie it all in rather than just talking about it or showing like the brain scans kind of thing.
Yeah. And I liked it too, because like as someone who watches hockey on television, it was filmed different. Like it was not just like they showed it like you were watching.
They didn't just take footage from a hockey game and just like insert it into the episode.
Or try and recreate it, but like they really brought you, and they didn't even like do what I thought they would probably do, which is like film it as if you're like in the stands, you know, on, you know, maybe in the front row, seats watching. Like they actually just moved the camera with the players, and I did also like that, because it did feel like you felt like you were right there, and I felt it because I like actually watch hockey. I was like, I'm annoyed, I can't see the scoreboard, I can't see, I can't tell what play they're trying to run. I can't tell what's happening because it's so close, but I like think it worked really well in terms of the story. I also, really liked the way that one particular hockey sequence, when he's going around and saying to all of them, like is letting, when he's like delivering these big hits and then saying like, you know, the next time you hit him might be his lat, like all of that things. Yeah. Like, I think that scene was really, really well done. Felt interesting visually. But yeah, really highlighted the like point they were making about violence.
And we also get the fun little Easter egg. They're like, we've got Rogers and Downey facing off over the puck. Rogers and Downey are the creators of Leverage. So I just like fun little like name drop.
They were who they put in the face off. That's cool. I also like that they had a penalty box shot.
The one thing that I knew about hockey going into this is there's that one gif that went around on Tumblr of like the dude in the green suit with the fucking waffles.
So the dude in the green suit. I forgot.
That August is gonna drop some like hockey lore on us.
Okay, so was it like a full green neon green body suit?
The tag that you used to get that had like zipped up in the back and you couldn't see the face.
Lycra body suit. Okay, so back in like 2009, 2010 ish. I don't know when it started. there were these two dudes in, this is in my home city, my home team, that decided that they were going to like wear these green suits to games. And they started wearing them to games and just sort of like doing goofy shit. And people started to like pay attention to them. They became known as the Green Men. They attended so many games. They were like iconic in our, like one of our biggest playoff runs when we almost won the cup. They were like, and they would get seats behind the opposing player's penalty box and just like harass. And they would just like do dumb shit. They would bring dumb props and they would be silly. And they would just like make, not make faces, but like contort their bodies weirdly behind the opposing player's bench or penalty box to just try and like be little assholes. They were like Vancouver staples. everyone else hated them. We loved them. It was very funny.
Yeah, I wonder
but
why.
Yeah, that's my team. That's my, those are Canucks fans. We are a little strange. It's a little extra.
I can't quite tell if you're claiming them as your people or trying to distance yourself.
Oh, it's a bit of both. It's a bit of both, honestly. That's what it's like to be a fan of my particular team, is that you simultaneously like, I will always be here defending this team, but also like, you know, the whole Riverdale, the epic highs and lows of high school football is like, that's what it's like being a Canuck fan. Mm-hmm. Epic highs and lows, mostly lows, but
yeah, it's giving Supernatural, Stan.
It's giving Supernatural.
I know this is stupid. I know this is dumb, but also you can pry this shit from my cold dead hands.
Yeah. I also know that I'm probably never, this is probably never going to give me what I want, mm-hmm. but will I walk away? Ever?
No.
Probably not. Yeah, I have a type when it comes to fandoms. It does include my sports fandoms. can I make one more?
Absolutely.
hockey comment. There's a point where I thought the announcers, first a compliment. I thought the announcers, the way they bantered and the way they like called the game felt pretty like accurate to like the kind of language that you hear from announcers. Except for one moment where he says, he's talking about LeBert, he's talking about Jack, and he says, you know, he's saying, that crease is mine. Well, a shot of him skating through the middle of the ice. The crease is when you are at the goal line, when you're at the goal, like at the goal posts, that's the crease. It's where the goalie stands. He is nowhere near the crease. That is a great, line would work if he was anywhere near the crease. In that moment, the crease is not his because he's like on the other side of the ice.
So what we're getting from this is the editor has no idea anything about hockey.
The editor is actually Australian. Fun fact: they've got no idea how hockey plays.
Some things about hockey really great, and then some things you're like, that's not accurate. Which I think is what made this episode charming to me, is because they did just enough hockey accuracy that I was like, oh, the stick tapping, that's great. And then moments like, crease is mine, and I was like,
you know what's so funny about that is the fact that I was like, didn't even think about the crease line. I was like, oh yeah, hockey thing, whatever. But the tapping was the bit that got me. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Be accurate. See, though, it's the weird shit that's like really specific that's always true. It's the like throwaway stuff that you're like,
and that's probably why they didn't mention the score or like how they were going in the series, because then hockey nerds like you would pull it apart.
Would be like, that's, I mean, I pulled it apart anyway, but that's.
Oh, God. Okay.
So
I want to talk about some misogyny this episode. Yes. Very briefly.
Let's also
very
do that.
Briefly. We don't usually have to talk about it too much in Leverage. It's much more of a Supernatural vibe. And then I do have a fun segue into a minor Supernatural point.
Okay.
I promise it's
love
small.
This.
My first note about it is, number one, I hate that when Nate is talking to the Mark and he's saying, like, if you get 10 shots, then you can have, like, my boat and my house and well.
We've seen him do this before.
He, at the end, includes his wife as a tradable asset.
Gross.
And I was like,
gross.
I hate that. I understand that it's part of him playing a character. And we mentioned before, it's, like, Nate always plays, like, the most annoying douchey person. Like, that's his go-to. But I do hate it because it was not a necessary inclusion. Like, he's already said the boat, the house, the whatever. Like, we get the point. You did not have to include your wife as a tradable object. I really did not like that.
Agreed.
And we have had this joke before, and you didn't like it the first time.
And I didn't like it now. So this isn't new.
The difference is last time, Sophie was from the background.
Mm.
I also liked, I did like that There's a little bit of pushback when Sophie first starts like saying things about hockey, like she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah,
But then they look at her. She's yeah, exactly. She's like, "Oh, a girl can't watch hockey," which is great. Like, I appreciate
yeah.
that.
And then once we get into a little bit further into the episode and Elliot's like out on the ice, someone
Yes, I know
literally
what you're gonna
calls him
say.
pretty boy.
I know what you, yeah, I had
And
that moment as well.
I was like, okay, number one, misogyny. Number two, Dean core. Like,
Although hockey has a homophobia problem.
That too.
And that's what that's a reference to, which I was like, that's accurate. I hate that they chose to include it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Dean coded, very Dean coded of him.
Yeah, exactly. And it literally comes down to the, like, the implications of that line, both being misogynistic and then also homophobic. And like, that's kind of why I was like, oh, supernatural Dean core, because like, this is something that they do in that show fucking all the time, where they like imply that Dean is like feminine or queer and this is somehow bad or weak or, you know, whatever. And so I was like, oh, this feels familiar. But that takes me to a more fun note, which is that Parker like drugs the medical doctor by giving him gum. And I was like, who the fuck would take gum from a stranger? And then in brackets, I've got to immediately wait, no, Dean Winchester, LMAO, never mind.
What gets me about that scene every time, and it's so fucking funny to me, he's like, so which one is your husband? And she's like, the big one. Who skates?
So every hockey player, like, there's not a lot of hockey players that are like shorter than like if you're a 5'10 hockey player, I'm sorry, you're a small hockey player. You're 5'10. Like hockey players are, there's a guy on the team that I like, my team, that's like, I don't know, I want to say he's like 6'5, 6'6. There was a guy on another team that just retired that was like 6'8. Like
Jesus. Anyway.
Back onto the episode.
Sorry, we keep getting distracted.
Sorry, I keep finding, I don't usually have a captive audience to hear about hockey, so I apologize.
What I do really love about this episode is we get a really quintessential Parker moment this week. And it's like, blink it and you'll miss it. Like, if you're not watching for Parker, because I'm a Parker stan, I'm a Parker girly.
I'm wondering if I know the scene you're about to mention.
Do you want to guess before I go ahead?
Yeah. August, do you want to have a guess as someone who has no idea about these characters?
I'm thinking there's two different moments that I think of when I think of Parker in this episode. The first one is the one where they're talking about the magnet, like the first initial where she's about to like seriously injure herself. That's the first moment I thought of, but that's all I got.
Okay. I was thinking the part where she meets Hardison, he's sitting on the stairs, I think, and she's got like the drink and she says, did
really
I fall
cute.
Asleep again? And then she's like, what happened at the end of the movie or something? I was thinking about that because I was like, her feeling comfortable enough to fall asleep. And also it's like a very sweet look at like their relationship, which is also very new, by the way. Like this is like a recent development.
It felt like it was new, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, it's been one of those things where, again, it's been like, oh, this has been a long time coming. But like it's very recently been actually established where they've both been like, we're actually doing this. Like, I think it was like confirmed last episode or something, you know, that they're officially an item, as it were. But that was for me the moment where I was like, she's just so much more comfortable and relaxed.
I mean, you're correct. That is a very fundamental Parker moment. That is like a very big sort of turning point for Parker, who is inherently not that comfortable around other people. She has never been able to trust anyone. So like, you're correct, but not the moment I was thinking of. The moment I was thinking of is the moment when they're like, oh, he's pulling out, we've got to change plans. And she's like, oh, I've got contingencies.
Yeah.
It is such a quintessential Parker moment to have multiple plans which involve stealing money.
I like that she was so prepared. We love, that.
I think actually my note on that scene is that Parker says that when, you know, she says that she's got contingencies. And what I really liked was that the camera actually pans around the circle and you get Hardison's reaction to her saying that. And he has the biggest fucking heart eyes. Like, you can see the love bleeding out of his face. And I was like, I think that's so cute. Like, she was like, I've got contingencies. And he was like, yeah, you do. Like, I love it. I think it's
also
so great.
A massive moment because she says, I have contingencies. And Nate normally would shut down somebody else's plan in his job. But Nate immediately goes, okay, what's the plan? So for me, this is a really, like, quintessential moment of Parker not only feels comfortable enough sharing the plans that like she thinks of, but also she's reached a point with Nate where he's no longer immediately shutting down other input into his job.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, especially because like Nate and Parker have such a father-daughter dynamic. It's very much like he's letting her take that first like sort of hesitant step out of the nest kind of thing, and he's just gonna let her do it, and like he'll be there if she needs, but like,
and every time I hear here if you need, all I can think about is fucking an apple. You probably don't know, it's that's a very Australian joke.
Yeah, I do not know.
So netball is like a cousin of basketball, right?
Oh, I love netball,
except for it's predominantly female. And it's very, like, segmented. Like, you have to stay in your zone. And you can't, like, dribble the ball or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, if you have the ball, you actually aren't allowed to move. You can take a step, and it's, like, one foot. You can't step with both feet.
Also, it's a little closer to, like, handball?
No. Okay. But, like, one day we'll explain to you.
Okay, sounds good.
Australia's very good at that.
We'll get you to watch an episode of Kath and Kim, and then you'll know.
Everyone else is, like, locked out outside of the ring. So they will just stand there going, here if you need, here if you need.
And like the idea is like because you that's can't so move if you've got the ball. So if you want to move into a better position, you have to pass the ball off to someone else so you can move and they can pass it back. And so everyone's like, here if you need, because like if you need to move, you can pass. They're basically saying I'm clear, like no one's defending me. So you can like get the ball to me and then move. But it is so funny. And like Catherine Kim does this great thing. There's a character called Sharon and she's a like big netball player, and like so you often see her at games and stuff, and it's literally her running up and down the court the whole time going, here if you need, here if you need, and that's like her entire gameplay. She rarely actually has the ball but it's her just being like, I'm here if you need. Anywho, do we have any other points about the actual episode?
I think I'm done.
Yeah, I don't have any other.
I have like a couple of disjointed points of just things that I kind of liked, which I might run through quickly if no one else has.
Yeah, go for it. I'm all done for the day. You're all done for the day, August?
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to check my notes, but I don't think so.
Cool. So I have a note, which is that the actor that they had playing the son this episode, very good. Like as a child actor, particularly like the way that he was choking up in the like opening scene, loved it. Beautiful, exceptional, loved him.
Important to note, the one area in which Supernatural always beats the shit out of Leverage is casting in child actors.
Yeah.
Leverage is normally like, they're good, they're fine, there's nothing wrong with them. Right. But like, they're not like, Supernatural, which is weirdly, like it's a thing.
Yeah. I have a question about the magnet from the opening scene, which I don't understand why Parker was blowing on it. After he like covers it up, she like blows on it, and I was like, what is this?
Is it like, just because of the like force that it would be hot? Like,
yeah, I could not figure out.
I don't believe Parker knows what she's doing.
I mean, to be fair,
didn't know about this magnet until like right before that moment, so
yeah, so and I was like, I don't know what's happening.
Partisan says there's a reason nerds only have 9 fingers,
yeah. But I was very confused by that. I'm not quite sure what they were going for, but like, all right, sure.
Comedy gold. That's what I got.
I also loved when Sophie had a line where she says, maybe you have a small brain. I did love that when she's talking about like why this guy hasn't sold the team or whatever.
Oh, and also we have Nate having a staring contest with the fucking turtle.
Yes, which... and it is weird that Sophie thinks that's attractive. I'm just going to put that out there.
Him and Vlad, and then Vlad comes in and is like, did you win? Also very, very funny.
It's literally like, are you winning, son? Like, but I also think that turtle needs a bigger terrarium. Just, you know, side note. There was also a quote where, and I forget who says it, maybe Elliot, who says bad choices are bad choices and it doesn't matter why you made them.
That is in his whole monologue after, you obviously don't have any kids, and he's like, I had brothers. I didn't know their names or their faces, but I knew their rank.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really interesting quote, because I would argue it's not true. Like bad choices are bad choices, but like there is important context to take into account, because sometimes context there is no good choice.
Doesn't matter.
I think
what he's saying is, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter why you made a choice. If you made a bad choice that hurt other people,
it's still a bad choice.
People are still hurt. There's nothing that you can do to take it back. You can just move forward.
Yeah, it just feels a little less nuanced than Leverage usually is, especially with Elliot, because as a character, like, Elliot has such
murdered so many people.
Yeah, he has such an interesting relationship with what the concept of a bad choice might be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like he makes a bad choice and, like, you know, he just has, like, it's not like he's talking about a bad choice, like, oh, I'm at dinner and I ordered the wrong thing off the menu and now I'm kind of, like, disappointed. Mm-hmm. Like, his kind of bad choice is just, like, a bunch of people just died. Like, you know, it feels weird that that's a very, like, casual thing. And it also feels kind of strange that it's not tied into a broader theme, which, I mean, it might come back, but, like, of the episode, it feels kind of, like, singular to me. Also, they used the magnet so many fucking times through this episode. It basically was a supporting character. Yep. Like, I think that magnet deserves to be paid because...
if nothing else, the writers of Leverage are tech nerds. They're
that's very clear.
What technology can we put in this way?
Mm.
They definitely had fun with it.
The iPad in season one of Heartstopper. Like, it was so present. And like, but also, I quite liked the quote when Nate is confronting the mark on the ice at the end of the episode and he says, I'm going to lose everything. And Nate goes, well, yeah, that's sort of the point. And I kind of liked that because I was like, wow, Leverage thesis statement. Like, the mark is there, like, I can't believe you've done this to me. And Nate was like, well, you're a dick, so.
You're terrible and you've made terrible choices that have hurt people. So, yeah, here's your consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like exactly. that as well. I did really, actually really like that final scene with all of them on the ice, like, confronting. I thought it worked really well. Like, I'm not a, you know, violence is the answer sort of person, but I did think that the intimidation piece of...
I think it's also just the other level of, like, this guy was willing to risk their lives to make money.
Yeah. Which angers me to...
Yes, and them getting to then, like, say... you don't get to do this anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to take you for everything you've got.
That was not okay.
And if you don't let us, then...
then we'll see how you fare. Like, if you take our role so lightly.
Anywho, that is all of the notes that I had for this episode. I've got to be real. I didn't actually have too many. Most of it was me just being confused about sports.
Yeah.
I feel like there wasn't actually a whole lot else happening.
It's less of a Leverage episode and more of just like a... you know, it's a hockey game broken up with bits of a Leverage.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, it's not a hockey game with fighting. It's fighting with some hockey sprinkled in.
It's fighting with some hockey sprinkled in and a tiny bit of Leverage on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's really what this episode is.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, lovely. We reached the end of the episode. Beth and August, how would you rate this episode out of 5?
I gave it a relatively low score. Mm-hmm. I gave it a 2.5 out of 5. And I'm interested to see how August rates it because I'm rating that knowing how good Leverage can be. And this is your only experience. Like,
this is the thing. I'm going to rate it way higher because I had a really fun time. I was sold by the concept of hockey and it was fun and silly. And
media does not have to be good. It just has to be fun.
Yeah, and so I actually would probably give it like a 4
if I really
because I have no other content.
Dude, if this is a 4, you're gonna fucking love this show.
Yeah. So
I genuinely, the reason that I gave it such a low rating is because normally, like, after maybe the first season where I kind of adjusted to Leverage just being like I watch it for a different reason to what I watch most of my media for. Like, I watch it and enjoy it because it is silly and fun. Like, at this point, the reason that this episode is ranked so low is because not only was it like it was a fine episode, like structurally, there were things that I liked and things that I didn't. But normally I'm more willing to put things aside because it is so fun and because I like the team dynamic so much.
Yeah.
For me, this episode lacked so much of that like normal fun vibe energy and lacked so much of the team dynamics that I ranked it down. So if you think that this is very silly and fun, you will fucking love the rest of it.
And because you don't like hockey, like, I feel like it's one of those
things where
if you enjoyed hockey, you might find that part silly and fun. Whereas, like, I found both the character dynamics were fun and also just the hockey was silly and fun. Both the hard parts of hockey that were, like, good and the parts of it that were, like, this person obviously doesn't know how hockey
knows
works.
Nothing about hockey. Both, yeah.
Both of those were enjoyable for me, but I think that contributed a ton. So yeah, it definitely made me excited to try out a few more episodes. I'm excited to go. I have now 3 episodes on my list. Recommendations.
Ooh, I'm loving this.
So
always send me your thoughts, obviously.
Oh, of course, of course, yeah. Of course. I'll send both of you if it's an episode I know you've both seen.
Okay, lovely. The next episode is called The First Contact Job. Beth, what do you think it's about?
Okay, I'm not going to lie. I did see the thumbnail. I'm going to be completely transparent. I did see the thumbnail for the next episode. So I have an idea. It's giving Men in Black. So I'm going to assume that it's like maybe like an X-Files-y type episode.
It better fucking have something to do with space. It's a yeah, college yeah. episode, The First Con. I did, when I watched this episode, it tried to like go on autoplay to that one, and I saw the title and I went, ooh. I was curious immediately because of the Star Trek reference.
Yes, no. So I'm assuming it's going to be maybe some kind of, I'm actually kind of thinking it's maybe going to be like Clap If You Believe in Fairies or Clap If You Believe from Supernatural that we just watched. Where
not too different of vibes actually,
like where it's like oh it's like people who are conspiracy theorizing about like UFOs and shit, like I that's kind okay, of maybe fun. Where I think it could be going, so that could be fun. I'm really hoping actually that we get FBI Parker, because we haven't had Taggart and McSweeten in yeah. a while, and I do love them, so that would be very fun. Taggart and McSweeten are kind of like the Ed and Harry equivalent, where they're kind of bumbling idiots and they end up taking credit for a lot of shit, but they're like very lovable and
love that. I love that trope.
Yeah. So I think that could be really fun because we haven't had them yet this season. Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
I don't think so.
All right, lovely. Well, thank you so much for listening to us today. Please have a lovely morning, evening, afternoon, night, lunch, brunch, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., midnight, whatever time of the day and or night that you've listened to us. If you want to talk to us about anything else, you can find us on all sorts of social medias. You can also find on August on all sorts of social medias. Would you like to plug yourself?
Yeah. So my personal fandom right now, it's hockey season, so it's a lot of hockey.
Especially relevant.
Yeah, especially relevant. I'm on basically all platforms as at Astral Spock. And then I also run a Supernatural podcast and a Our Flag Means Death podcast. And those are called Saving People, Queering Things, and Find Things Well, respectively. Also, you can find them anywhere.
And if you want to interact with us at all, you can talk to us about literally anything, but suggested conversation topics include how little we understand about hockey.
Yeah. Please send hockey things to Beth and Jamie. Yeah. I'm going to.
I was just going to say, please forward all hockey-related questions to August, actually.
Well, questions come to me, but, like, funny GIFs and videos and out-of-context hockey stuff.
Any, like, obscure hockey lore?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. What is, actually, this is what I'm genuinely curious mm-hmm. about, because we have a lot of people who listen from different parts of the world. What is your, like, country sport that you think is underappreciated by the rest of the world? Because I think for us, AFL and netball,
yeah,
definitely underappreciated mm-hmm. sports. You know, for August, obviously, hockey, like, globally is probably an underappreciated
sport. Oh, it
sport.
Is. Absolutely. Like, it's a very small sport.
Yeah. So I would love to know, like, if you have a sport that you're passionate about and you never have an excuse to talk about it, here is your opportunity.
I love that.
Come and explain all the rules. Tell us all your favorite players. We'd love to hear it.
I do think I might make a PowerPoint, an introduction to hockey PowerPoint.
Oh my God, please. And thank you for joining us. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me info dump about hockey for like 2 hours.
It's been a delight. And also you get to have the coveted spot of being our first guest on both of our podcasts. So
that does feel pretty special.
Only difference is you will be the only guest on this podcast because I am too lazy to edit more than one collaboration.
That's fair. And you're also approaching the end of this show, right? Like, it's only
this is the last season.
This is the last season. We're almost done. Well, we started Leverage a year after Supernatural, and we're like 3 or 4 months away from finishing Leverage.
And yet.
By this time next year, we should be fully finished Leverage. But thank you so much for love.
For what?
I went to say watching, and then I changed to listening, and then it just did not come out of my mouth.
Okay.
What?
So thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.